welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 234 of the podcast. And it is 13th of September 2015 as I record this. And I have next to my desk the first conquer of the autumn or the fall to Americans. And I love picking up conkers at this time of year. There's just this couple of weeks, and horse chestnuts, if you don't know what I'm talking about, when they come out of their spiky shells, and it's like having a little mini tree on my desk. So I get quite emotional over conkers for some reason. But today I have one here by my desk, and so that is lovely. I do like this time of year. Well, anyway, today I have an interview with Brian Cohen on writing your sales description or your back blurb, which of course it is one of the toughest things for an author to write. You know, it's hard enough writing a book, you know, like a 70,000 word book, and then you have to write a couple of hundred words and sum the whole thing up and sell it to readers. Most of us certainly redo our sales descriptions over time. So Brian and I go through tips for fiction and non-fiction authors, and I think you'll find it very useful. And Brian is also co-host of the Sell More Book Show with Jim Cookwell, which is one of the shows for me, which is a must listen every week to get the latest in the publishing news. And we also talk about whether podcasting is worth it, although clearly we are both biased. So I've had quite a few emails and tweets about Mark Coker's interview from last week, and people rethinking their exclusivity, which is awesome. Particularly wanted to give a shout out to long-term listener Avery Tingle. Hi, Avery. And I remember connecting with Avery right at the beginning of my online journey because he has such an awesome name. Avery said, "I've never had one of your interviews hit me as hard as the one you did with Mark Coker." So really good to hear about people, you know, even after so long, you know, and such a sort of developed publishing platform, that people are finding Mark's passion really important. And yeah, I think you'll also get another dose of the don't go exclusive, as next week I've got Liliana Hart, who is romance indie superstar of, you know, multi-million bestseller, on short-term, long-term thinking, and also how she makes more money at iBooks than she does on Amazon, and her tips for that long-term sales. That will be on next week's show on the 21st of September. We are packing in the quality interviews this as we move into the autumn. So in publishing news this week, continuing the march of successful indies in print, Jamie Maguire's Beautiful Redemption, which is a creates-based book, will be available soon in Walmart. This is actually pretty interesting. I remember Jamie's Beautiful Disaster, which was a really big hit in the UK. But then Jamie left her publishers to go indie, and she's released 10 books since then, which I also think is interesting. She, I was having a look on her site. She also makes her own covers with PicMonkey, which I don't usually recommend at all, but you know, hey, she's doing pretty well. So PicMonkey is P-I-C Monkey. And I know a couple of people who use that. I'm using Canva more and more, C-A-N. NVA.com, but these brilliant online tools for doing visuals. We're so lucky. We have so many cool things these days. Anyway, on personal things, I'm into my first week of co-writing a working title, Risen Gods, with Jay Thorne. And I actually had the seed of this idea, the idea, original, you know, basis idea, way back in 2004 when I was still living in New Zealand. And I really got into volcanology. New Zealand sits on the Pacific Rim of Fire. And Auckland, where I used to live, sits on a volcano field. And there still are active volcanoes in New Zealand. And then the Christchurch earthquake hit in 2011. Friends of mine were involved, and I remember the city, you know, most of it being kind of destroyed by the earthquake, and people dying. And so it kind of combines this background knowledge and interest I've had in earthquakes and volcanoes for years. You know, coming from England, where we do, you know, every country gets earthquakes, but most people don't feel it. But, you know, New Zealand, it is very kind of obvious that you've got volcanoes sitting there. So also lots of, we're weaving in Maori mythology and into a dark fantasy, almost apocalyptic thriller. And it's been a lot of fun so far. Obviously, we've only done 5 days, but 5 days each, you know, going back and forwards really adds up. So I'm super pleased by the way it's going. And because we've got two protagonists, it's been quite easy to split it. So we're writing kind of separate chapters at the moment, and then we're going to edit it one after another. So something I've been meaning to do for ages, really interested in what obviously Johnny B. Truant and Sean Platt and David Wright do over on the Self-Publishing Podcast. You know, they're amazing output based on co-writing. And also the thing that changed my mind on it, because I was a bit of a control freak, it was James Patterson's masterclass on masterclass.com when they interviewed some of his co-writers. And so this is something I'm really interested to see how it goes. And so far, we're still friends and we're still writing, aren't we, Jay? but we will, I will have Jay on the show once we're done. And we will go through the whole process and how we did that. So that's what I'm working on writing wise, although we are also looking to move house. So in the next month, things may be a little bit crazy. Lots of things happening, you know, personally. So yes, busy, busy. Also, just to remind you about the Scrivener webinar. You know, we all love Scrivener, but sometimes we just need a bit of help. And every time I do a Scrivener webinar with Joseph Michael, the Scrivener coach, I learn new things and actually start using new functionality. So I really look forward to these webinars. Come and join us, even if you do use Scrivener already, or if you'd like to know how to use it. So it will be a 90-minute webinar on Thursday, the 24th of September at 3 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. London. But also, if you register, you can get the recording. So lots of tips on how to use Scrivener. And every time we do this, we get like 1,000 people registering. So, which, you know, we do like to cap it at 1,000. So please register for this at thecreativepen.com/lovescrivener. LoveScrivener. Love Scrivener. thecreativepen.com/lovescrivener. I keep trying to do these redirect links and I'm kind of running out. But there you go. Okay, so of course, you can always look at the show notes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. And this is episode 234. All right, so what you've sent me this week, one of my favourite segments of the show. Hi, Joanna. I was listening to your latest episode while flying down the highway on my BMW motorcycle en route to one of my writers' groups from Dharma Kelleher in Phoenix, Arizona. Sounds good. I didn't know you could listen to podcasts whilst on a motorbike. I hope that's safe. Marion Hermansen. Hi, Marion. I'm listening to your podcast in Steinbach, Germany, near Frankfurt, while cleaning my kitchen. Too messy to send a photo, so here's a picture outside my kitchen window. And Marion says she's inspired by getting up early to write, and for the last 3 days has been getting up at 5 a.m. to write. Good on you, Marion. Maybe try that a couple of days a week. Make sure you get some sleep. Also a little thanks to Gregory Payette, who's said it's hard to find someone as uplifting and positive as the Creative Pen. I really appreciate that, Gregory. Comment on the post I shared this week on my lessons learned 4 years as an author entrepreneur. So I actually think it's almost today is my anniversary of leaving my day job to become a full-time author entrepreneur. And I shared my lessons learned this week. If you haven't seen that, I did talk about the Plato's Chariot, the lesson of Plato's Chariot, which is essentially, you know, there's a chariot, it's like back in the ancient Greek times, a chariot with a dark horse and a white horse. And you have to have them both running in the same direction and running well together in order that the chariot can, you know, get places and do things. So I constantly wrestle with my two horses as such, my dark side, JF Penn, fiction side, the creative head, you know, the side that just wants to be on her own. own and write stories. And The White Horse, which is the person you hear most of the time, which is Joanna Penn. You know, I love to help people. I want to be a sort of British Tony Robbins and change people's lives and that type of thing. So actually reconciling the two of these things is a constant challenge. And I've had quite a lot of comments from people saying that they also find this a challenge, you know, between the creative side, the business side, the writing side and real life, that I think we all have to keep our dual horses or multiple horses running in the same direction. The other thing I actually put on that post, just while we're here, is that I went to some publishing drinks this week, and it was funny because I really felt like the indies are now on this sort of parallel path, not sort of hankering after each other anymore. I actually used to care a lot more about what the publishers were doing, but now I feel like we can just get on with our own stuff and it doesn't really matter. So that was quite liberating. And I shared a bit about that in that post as well. So I'll include that in the show notes. What else? Shout out to Lynn Milford. Hi, Lynn. Listen to the State of the Indie Nation. And Lynn is someone I always bump into at the London Book Fair. So see you next year, Lynn. Casey Edmonds said he enjoyed the interview with Jeff Goines, which was a while ago, but he really found it inspiring just by listening to us both. So I always love to hear people listening to back episodes too. What's so wonderful about audio is, you know, why I say the date at the beginning now is you might be listening to this in years time, like years to come. And that's really cool. It's like we're connecting across time travel. Very cool. The lovely Arizona firecracker sent me a picture. Did this listening to fellow INFJ the Creative Pen podcast, even heard a shout out, and here's another one. painting of some lovely birds. I always like to know what, you know, what are you doing while listening, cleaning, driving. Oh, we've got a whole load of driving here. We'll get to that in a minute. Kayla says, folding laundry with my sleepy Frenchie Pearl, with a lovely picture of what I think is a French bulldog. Really gorgeous. So that's cool. Patches Chance, which is a great name. Patches Chance, listening to the Creative Pen on my Amazon Echo while unpacking at my new place, which is cool because I don't have an Amazon Echo. It looks like a sort of big speaker. So that's cool. Alison says, driving around LA, listening to my favorite podcast. Thank you for the inspiration, and sent me a lovely picture of the palm trees in LA, which is cool. And Honoré is also driving, and Mark Dawson also said he listened last week while driving. And Jeff Adams, great SF road trip with Will for anniversary weekend, listening to some great audio from the Creative Pen RSP podcast, the rocking self-publishing podcast with Simon and Darren Hardy, whose book The Compound Effect I constantly recommend to people. Catherine, I want to say Goggia, it might be Goggia, G-O-G-G-I-A, have been ending my days with your podcast. Thanks for inspiration during final steps towards her book launch. So really cool roundup. So what are you doing while listening to the show, or has a particular episode spurred you into action? Do tweet me at The Creative Pen or email me joanna@thecreativepen.com and let me know. So this podcast episode is sponsored by 99 Designs, and you can go to 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A, for your free power pack upgrade. So yes, of course, you can get book covers with 99 Designs, and we all know that, but you can also get other things. And actually, talking about what Jay and I are doing with Risen Gods, I'm thinking of getting a custom illustrated map of New Zealand to go in the front of the book, mainly because the geography of the island is so important for the story. And that's the type of thing you can get there and tap into the power of multiple creative minds, as I did for the custom illustration of The Key to the Gates of Hell, which features on the cover and inside the print book of the same name. So obviously you can get these wonderful custom illustrations, you can get business cards, web pages, social media banners, headers, email newsletter templates, t-shirts, mugs, and so much more. But of course you can also get a professional original book cover that resonates with your target market. And you can do these brilliant polls where you can ask your followers or just people on social media what they think. And there's no risk with 99 Designs, as you only pay when you're happy with what is created, and you get loads of choice with multiple designers submitting work. So if you get the free Power Pack upgrade, it gives your project more chance of getting noticed with bold headers, highlighted background and featured listing, and it's worth $99. But if you go to 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A, you will get that for free. So go and check that out. And of course, this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. A big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. Thanks especially to new patrons, Per Steinar K. Hofton, which is just an awesome name. Thank you, Per Steinar. And Tim Haag. I think Tim did tell me that's how you pronounce it. And Derek Chamberlain. Thank you to everybody. And also Jennifer Eremiva. Thank you for supporting on Patreon. And I really do appreciate it. We're almost at the special Q&A for Patreon supporters, which is cool. And I love to know that you enjoy the show enough to support it. So, okay. If you want to check out Patreon, it's patreon.com/thecreativepen. Let's get on with the interview with Brian. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Brian Cohen. Hi Brian.
Hey Joe, happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the show finally. Just a little introduction. Brian is an author of YA novels and nonfiction, a stand-up comedian and entrepreneur. He's the co-host of the Selmore Book Show with Jim Cookwell, which is absolutely brilliant, and also runs Best Page Forward, a copywriting service for authors, which we're going to be talking about today. So Brian, you've written over 40 books, which is something I didn't know. Even though we've been friends for a while, I was like, 40? That's amazing. So tell us a bit more about how you got into writing.
Well, originally I started blogging at a website called buildcreativewritingideas.com. And the thing about it was, and I don't know if you're, I think you've probably got some similar things with this. And Creative Pen, I guess, started kind of around the same time. So you kind of wanted to learn about publishing, and I wanted to learn about not being lazy and actually sitting down and writing. So I kind of started this website up to force myself to write and learn as much as I could about writing motivation. And within a couple of years, I had some data about which keywords were doing the best. And creative writing prompts was by far the biggest. And as soon as I learned about self-publishing, I put a bunch of my posts into a book and self-published that, which led to a lot of other creative writing prompts books, some of which are workbook combinations of my other books. So me having 40 books out isn't really 40 books. It's more like 40 products, some of which are just workbook versions of the other. So I'm not some 40 novel crazy person that's done this by the age of 32. So I'm not insane for that reason.
But tell us about how you then moved into fiction, because that's a relatively new thing.
Oh yeah. I always loved the creative side of things with writing. I used to be in theater and, like you said, stand-up comedy. And I was a playwright for a while, but never really found the groove of how to actually sit down and write a full novel until I really tapped into the self-publishing podcast Story Beats concept and Steve Scott's Writing Habit Mastery. And eventually you hear the same advice enough times. You say, look, I don't care if you like pantsing, you need to write an outline, because otherwise you're going to write yourself into a corner. And after about 5 failed novels where I didn't finish, I finally was able to finish the first Ted Saves the World book. And from there, I was hooked. I said, okay, this is the system that works for me. And I did it 4 more times to finish through the 4th novel in that series. So it was all about finding a system that worked for me and actually getting my butt in the chair to do it.
Well, just I know now people will want to know what is the system that works for you, because like you said around build creative writing ideas, you've been looking into this kind of habity stuff and trying to assimilate. I've heard you talk about trying dictation, for example, which I tried and failed at as well. So what is the system that is working for you right now?
What works for me is I do a chapter by chapter outline of the book, and I'll start that with some brainstorming kind of on what could happen. I kind of go back to my prompts days and think, if that's true, what else is true, and kind of brainstorm as many ideas as possible. Then go into an outline, one or two sentences per chapter, nothing more. And just so I get the basic kind of connect the dots framework for what's going to happen. From there, I turn that broad outline, which I do write by hand. I don't know why that, it goes back to high school essay writing days for some reason. And I'll take that outline and expand it into about 6 to 8 sentences per chapter, so I know a lot more bullet points about everything that's happening. And then I plot out, okay, well, I know if I'm going to write 2 chapters a day, how many chapters I have outlined, it's going to take 25 work days, which is about, if I work 5 days a week, that's 5 weeks. So I know I can plot it out on the calendar Monday through Friday for the next 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. I will sit down, write those 2 chapters each of those days. And I mentioned this on Sell More Book Show, certainly, that I go to a writing co-op space, which is just this perfect little haven for writers where people can go and not be bothered. And I know that not every city has that, so I feel bad when I say, oh yeah, you should go find that place. But but I'm lucky enough to have found one here in Chicago. And I go there almost every day probably now, but definitely Monday through Friday when I'm writing the fiction. And I go there, finish it, and then it's in. I have that first draft ready at the end of 5 weeks.
Which is great. And I mean, I've struggled for years to try and come up with a routine. And now, like you, we're recording on a Tuesday, and yesterday was my first day of the next novel. And I put in my diary, same 5 weeks, with the days in the diary. And I go to the cafe. I just go to a local cafe. So, you know, anyone can do that. But to get away from the place where we do this other stuff, right? Like you do podcasting and loads of other stuff. So to get away from the desk and then, like you say, just do the work. Although I use the story grid, Sean Coyne's story grid, like one pager outline. I'm not as good as you as outlining. But I think, I mean, all of that is brilliant. And you're someone who has, you know, experimented with loads of different things and tried to find best practices. And now you've got this great service for authors, Best Page Forward. So first of all, what is it all about? Tell us what is it about and why is what you're doing so important for authors?
Well, it's funny because Best Page Forward is an idea that Simon Whistler, our friend on Rocking Self-Publishing, actually came up with for me in a mastermind that we're a part of. And what he said to me was, Brian, you write good copy. You're a copywriter. That's your side job. That's your 20 hours a week job that you do. What if you actually applied that to authors, which is your big focus with Sell More Book Show, with your nonfiction? Why not apply that to authors? And I got to thinking, you know, you're right, Simon, you brilliant guy, you. I should try this out for authors. And what I decided was, at first I would focus on book descriptions. I look at so many book descriptions out there, and it doesn't matter if you're self-published or traditionally published, most of them are pretty bad. And they don't do a good job of actually pointing out what qualities the book has, what makes this book worth buying, how it fulfills this person's desires for, whether it be paranormal romance or nonfiction on self-publishing. You need to sell it. People aren't very good at selling. You and I both know this. Mm. And I think that When I tried to just take on a few of these just to try them out, I found that, you know, I like doing this work and I think that I can help people while I'm doing it. So I launched this in June, and within the first month, I had 100 orders because obviously people either they know they're not very good at writing descriptions or they don't like doing it and because they don't feel comfortable doing it. Copywriting is so different from writing fiction or even writing nonfiction prose that it's tough for people to get their heads around it. And that's something with Best Page Forward I've been able to provide.
Yeah. And, you know, before we move into some, because obviously we're going to spill the beans on some tips for sales descriptions for people. But first of all, just explain the difference between, like, what is copywriting? You know, what is the difference between copywriting and normal writing?
Yeah. And we had a chat about this off the air because a lot of authors don't know what copywriting is. And copywriting is essentially words that sell. It can be in many different forms. There can be copywriting for your emails when you're putting together an autoresponder, copywriting for sending a review request to a book reviewer. Copywriting is really anything in which you're trying to get a certain objective. It's a persuasive form of writing that can be for selling or can be for getting any kind of call to action where someone will do something for you. And it's so different from fiction. And the funny thing is, I know that there are so many fiction writers out there who, if they kind of knew some of the basics, they could do this themselves. But most people kind of bang their head against the wall and say that it's really tough and they strain. And it's because they haven't practiced the art of copywriting, which fortunately I've gotten to do in my freelance line of work, and I really enjoy doing it.
Yeah. And I mean, how I started writing them was like copying out other people's blurbs, like, you know, and when, you know, I use the term blurb, but we're talking about sales descriptions that go in the Amazon description box, just in case people are wondering, it is that description. But the point is, it's a sales description. They don't call it a sales description, do they? It's called description. But the point is, let's ask you. So before we get into the details of the good stuff, what are the main things that people get wrong with that sales description?
99% of authors will only write a book synopsis in the description. And even with a good synopsis, which I think traditional published book descriptions tend to have this problem a little bit too, even a great description won't necessarily sell, because when you're just telling basically what happens in a story from kind of your 500 feet up view, it doesn't connect always with your reader. And so I think that the first thing is that they'll just write a synopsis and not really pay attention to what is it about this genre or the way I'm telling this story that excites other readers. And without that emotional investment from the beginning, it's going to be really difficult for a reader to connect. And some will buy, and some best-selling authors have bad descriptions, but they could have more sales with a more emotionally connecting copywriting.
Yeah, I think that emotion is something we forget. And also, it's very, very hard for authors to turn what might be a 70,000 word book into, like, you know, a couple of hundred words, really. And it is incredibly, incredibly difficult. One thing we should say up front, if people are like worried about this, is that one of the best things about being indie is you can change it. So with all the tips we're now going to talk about, people can always go back and change their descriptions, right? So this is not a big deal. So let's look at the various aspects of the sales description. Let's start with nonfiction, because you know, we're going to talk about nonfiction and fiction separately. What are the most important aspects of a nonfiction sales description?
Well, I think it's really important to think about what problems a reader has, because each nonfiction book, the goal of a nonfiction book is, you're solving a particular problem for a reader, and they want to, they're on Amazon or they're on Google or they're wherever, they're searching to find, how do I fix, how do I make my book descriptions better? How do I write better emails? They're searching this, and then they come upon maybe your product description. They want to know that your book addresses that problem. So right off the bat, you can have your hook. I like to call it a tagline right up front, in which you have your hook. You can have something like, have you ever wondered how you could write better book descriptions in less time?
Wow, that is masterful.
Right? No, I would never say that. But I think that when you have that hook right up front, that question that's in the reader's potential customer's mind, you are going to get them to keep reading. And that's the whole point of the tagline, nonfiction and fiction, to keep them reading, because attention spans are short and Amazon only lists a few lines now, at least on the desktop version. So you need to get them quickly.
So we've got and I agree with you, like the first thing should be they have to know they're in the right place, basically. So, you know, I was talking to a psychologist who wanted to write a book on cognitive behavioral therapy. And I said to her, actually, people are not searching for cognitive behavioral therapy. They're searching for, you know, I'm depressed, you know, need help with depression, or, you know, do you want some help? You know, we're always trying to put ourselves in the minds of the customer at this point, which is difficult when you've been in your own head for so long. But I wanted to ask about, for nonfiction, should you outline the table of contents, for example?
I think that it can be helpful, but I don't think it's necessarily the thing you have to do. I think at this point, it depends on how good your table of contents is. And you almost need to treat each chapter header like it's a mini headline, so that you're getting people to get invested. Maybe the headlines should be little questions. How do I fix this? How do I do that? I think it's almost better to just list a few of them kind of in bullet point form, because people like reading bullet points, and maybe just hit your top four or five. I like to do something like, in this book, you'll learn. And then those five bullet points. And something I think, this isn't exactly related, but I think something that nonfiction authors need to do that they aren't doing is establish their own expertise in the book description, because people, you know this problem. You have trouble selling yourself sometimes. I have trouble selling myself sometimes. People don't always like to sell themselves. So they sell themselves short when they don't mention why they are the person who should be turned to. They are a 20-year expert on financial advice, an experienced copywriter who's written 200-plus book descriptions. They need to know that not only does this book solve the problem, but that you're the person who is going to solve their problem and that they can trust you.
You're so right. And I think this is really hard for people, and that's why having an external kind of viewpoint that you're giving people is great, or talking about it with other authors. It's almost like, you know, I've always helped people with their CVs or their resumes. I'm like, you know, you've got to blow your own horn, because people don't know who you are. And so often we just think, oh, people will just discover me and they'll discover how amazing I am. But this, you're exactly right. I mean, you have to do that. So the other question I had here is, you mentioned that in this book you will learn. I heard on Michael Hyatt's show, either podcast or something, that the word discover is better than learn. So one of those copywriting.
Yeah, and I have seen discover used. I think that's when you find good words, because it's funny, the word you is also such a great word. Versus a third person kind of way around it.
It's better to have you than I, isn't it?
Exactly.
You will learn, not I will teach you.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. So when you find good words, discover, you want to make, and especially with fiction, really great adjectives like page turner, compelling. when you find those words, and everyone should test, everyone should try one description, try it for a couple weeks, try another one. You should always test. But when you find words that work, and I mean, Michael Hyatt is a best-selling author and amazing speaker. So when he says something, you listen, of course. But when you find good words, you use them, and you can use them in every different description. People aren't going to look at different ones and say, he used discover in both of those descriptions. I'm not buying. No, of course not. So you just have to use, when you find the good words, use them.
Yeah. And the other thing about, which is applicable both fiction and nonfiction, what about getting quotes from other authors? Do you think that, I mean, obviously there's another field, editorial reviews or something, but should those quotes from authors go in the description? Are they any use? Do we have any evidence that they do actually sell?
We do have evidence. BookBub did a study not too long ago in which they tested their click-through rate. Obviously, people don't buy straight off BookBub, so they only know the click-through rate, not necessarily the buying rate. But they tested descriptions. They're about 150-word description that they have on their pages. They tested quotes, and they tested quotes of authors versus quotes of publications. And what they found was, and I think I'm going to get these numbers right, they found that when there's a quote from a well-known author in there, that click-through rate actually goes up 22%. And an author versus a publication, like, say, Publishers Weekly versus Stephen King, the Stephen King one, or the author quote in general, is going to get 30% better than the quote from the publication. So quotes are great. And that's one of the reasons I recommend, if you have a quote from someone that typical genre reader is going to know, it should go right after the headline, because you want them to know, oh crap, Stephen King thinks this guy is awesome. I am going to buy this right away. And so you need that quote right in there. If it's not from someone well-known, use it in the editorial reviews section. If there's going to be some quote from some person, because readers look at a quote from someone they don't know as some person, then I don't think it's necessarily going to sell.
Yeah. Although I'm always really surprised by who people have heard of and who they haven't, you know.
That's true. That's
I'm good. Like, oh, wow, Seth Godin. And people are like, I don't know who you're talking about.
I have subscribed to Seth Godin's emails. I know Seth Godin. But yeah, no, it's funny. It is funny.
Yeah, and another thing that is kind of related to both fiction and nonfiction is, and I see Nick Stevenson do this, and he's obviously pretty good at this type of thing, is to actually list out, well, two things, a Q&A with the author, and also a list of the categories that the book has either been a bestseller in or that actually is kind of ranked in for keyword reasons. What do you think about that?
I've done it. I've definitely done it on my books. I don't do it for my clients. And the reason is I still don't know if it works. Mm. I have seen it work for permanently free books. And I will recommend that to people who are in that situation. It's the first book in a series and it's permanently free. I'll recommend that. But I don't know. I'm not sold on it yet. Mm. And obviously a lot of people have tried it through Nick's stuff. And I think that's great because you need to try things. But I want to discourage the set it and forget it mentality of book descriptions. Mm. People or their autoresponder emails or their review requests, anything. I want to discourage that because people forget about them. Mm. And then they never get to test to see which thing could work better. And so I think that's something people need to try. They should try the Q&A thing. If it gives them results, keep it. But if they don't ever try anything with those, or they only try the Q&A and then never test out without or never test out a different way of doing it, they're never going to know if it does better, because authors are not always in the business mindset, which I know you've tried to cure people, get them to think that way. But testing is a huge part of business. Knowing one way converts better than another is so important. It's such key data for authors to know.
Yeah, although you say that, and I am shocking at testing, and I think there's lots of people now going, don't mention the word test. I don't ever, because I actually spent, you know, my previous life, I used to do testing and software testing, so it kind of brings me out in a kind of rash. Luckily, now I've hired my husband into the business. One of his jobs is going to be split testing, because I just can't face it. So anyone listening who cannot face testing, something is better than nothing.
No, I don't want to overwhelm anybody.
Yeah, so just something is better than nothing. And but definitely revisiting things every at least year to actually update stuff. Like, even you realize that you've changed a lot. You know, I just looked at some of the emails I wrote like a year ago, and you just really, you just kind of cringing going, oh, I really need to update that.
Oh, for sure. Completely.
Yeah. But okay. So was there anything else on nonfiction, or should we move into fiction?
I think that once you've, it's just to hit the highlights again, your hook, your expertise, and the problem you're solving, as long as you've got those in there, I think that you will do better than probably what you have.
Yeah. Okay, so with fiction, let's talk about that. So again, we're talking about a hook, but what does that actually mean for fiction?
Well, I think that for fiction, you need to determine, it's kind of the, you want to make sure your cover fits your genre, you want to make sure your hook fits your genre. If you're writing, and I've written a lot of romance descriptions lately, which has been super fun, because those have such a great hook. He is dark and mysterious. She is scarred and tortured. Can they find love on the frontier? You know,
that's great.
That's what I'm here for. No, I love those because they have such a key hook that genre readers are looking for. They're looking for a certain kind of guy and a certain kind of girl, and asking if they can find love. And that's so great. But even if you're not romance, there are great hooks to be found. If you're writing kind of werewolf books, obviously people want to know about the werewolves. If you're writing kind of a deep historical novel, people want to know what time period, which is another thing that BookBub recommends. They want to know what time period it is, and they want to know what the main driving force of the story is. So I think every genre maybe has a slightly different hook, but if you know your genre, and you should if you're writing in your genre, with your thrillers, you know that people like to see that there's some kind of race against time, something happening, and that the hero or heroine is in danger and needs to save a lot of people. Like, if you're a thriller reader, you want to know that that's going to be in this book. And you take that, make sure it's in your hook, then put your own J.F. Penn spin on it. Because your hooks are good. I looked at yours. You do a great job with your descriptions. So I can't sell you on them, darn. But I think that if you know your genre, you can write a strong hook. It's just setting out to do so.
And I must say, I've been rewriting mine for years. So, you know, I still want to tweak it some more. But as I mentioned near the beginning, what I did was write out over and over again other people's blurbs and to get the feeling. It's almost like the language. And what I've written down here is hyperbole. You know, it's like, it must race against time to save the world. You know, it's so over the top and it feels really fake. But do you think that over the topness, that hyperbole, is necessary in pretty much every fiction blurb, sales description?
Particularly genre fiction, where it is kind of a race against time, where it's not out of the question to say those kinds of things. I think that it really matters from genre to genre. I was writing a very realistic historical fiction novel description the other day, and my client was worried that it would be too hyperbolic. And so I think you do have to, if you're writing a very realistic historical novel, maybe not go away from the hyperbole. But in most cases, you're trying to hit general readers of that genre. And general readers of that genre want to know that it's a page turner, that it's compelling, that it's edge of your seat action. Mm. And you're right. It does feel fake when you're writing those kinds of things. But it's okay to be a little fake and test it. Because if you find that a little bit of going a little bit over the top with your description sells more books, then that's what you've got to do.
Yeah, you've got to do it. And if you look at all the best-selling thriller, or in my niche, thrillers, but in look at the top-selling books in your niche, and they are likely, if they're not famous people, they are likely to have this type of description. One other thing, character, like a character name and some kind of tag about the character. So, you know, Israeli assassin, Morgan Sierra or whatever. She's not assassin, but, you know. So you need the main character name, right? And something about that character. Is that like a rule for fiction?
I think it if it's not, it should be. Specifics sell, and that's in any genre. And if they don't know the character's name, they're going to have a tough time investing in them. I like to do character name, character occupation, and then with the start of the emotional journey for this character, what has happened in the past that's influencing their current actions, what's happening if it's a later book in a series, what just happened in the series that is causing them internal or external conflict. If you have that right away, that's almost another hook. You've just had your tagline hook, and then you're starting kind of the synopsis, and then you have your character hook right there. And the more hooks you can get in there, the better. So I totally think that if it's not a rule to have the character and their what they do and how they feel, then that should be a rule.
So the next thing that kind of happens is the complication, right? So, you know, we actually have to mention a few things about the complication and also the setting. Would that be right?
Yes. We want to know, and we as the reader, we want to know that there is something going on that has our main character's attention and that requires them to help. And I think that the setting can be baked in there. In historical, it's very important to have the setting right away, because people who like Civil War set novels, they want to know this is during Civil War. If people like War of the Roses, they want to know it's War of the Roses time. They want to know that. And BookBub has talked about having that up top in your description to help sell. So I think that you can bake in the setting wherever it makes sense. When the setting ties in with your conflict, which is always a good thing to have in your fiction anyway, when those work together, you can kind of interweave, especially with really dense epic fantasy. Something I like to do is weave, have a little bit of the ongoing conflict whenever I mention another plot line. So I'll say, while the kingdom is under siege, Rafe Finnegan is plotting his revenge after his blah, blah, blah. So I like to kind of weave in so that you're not just at the top saying, in a kingdom where blah, 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 for three or four lines. That's already too long. And you might say to yourself, three or four lines, that's nothing. My book is 250,000 words. But you need to try to keep people interested. It's like keeping the ball up in the air. Every time you have a really great hook of a character or of the story, you kind of bounce the ball back up in the air. If you have three or four lines that are uninteresting and they don't seem to move this conflict ahead, then you're dropping the ball. And so it's an exercise. It really is an exercise in keeping attention. So it's a challenge, but I think that there are steps people can follow, certainly, to do that more effectively and more efficiently.
Mm. And then really at the end, we're kind of asking a question and then the call to action. So mine's like, you know, can Morgan Sierra save the world? Click here to download a sample or whatever, you know. So that question, is that how you would normally end a fiction as well? Kind of a question that leaves an open hook?
I'll do 50-50. I'll do either a question or a really dire sounding statement. Ray Finnegan, I'll keep using this fake character name I came up with. Ray Finnegan must put a stop to the king's reign or everyone he knows and loves will die. Like that's it's basically could be phrased in the form of a question. Can he stop them before they die? So I really think either works. And what I like about the statement is it's really just a punch. It's really this punch in the gut, and you want to know what happens next either way. I don't know if one works better than the other. Haven't seen any data on it. Definitely something worth testing. But I'm going to insert a slightly different thing in between that question and that call to action. I have a new thing I've been doing, and it's not new. I mean, I'm sure I borrowed it from somebody, but I like to call it the selling paragraph. And this is where you can fit in some more hyperbole and a little more information about the series itself. It's also good for keywords. So I would say Rafe's Revenge is the first book in an epic fantasy series. And then I would go on to, if you like, once again, we're getting the if you like pirate adventures, compelling prose, detailed characters, then you'll love author's names, incredible introspective journey into the deep wilderness, something like that. Can you tell I've been writing a lot of these lately?
But we're not putting other authors' names in there, are we? Because Amazon are not keen on that anymore.
I think that I like the adjectives. I would rather do the adjectives because I have heard on and off about Amazon not being happy. What I've heard, though, with that 100%, Amazon does not want authors' names in the keywords, in the 7 keywords that you've provided. I've never heard of them actually flagging a description for having another author's name. So I think really, if you want to play it completely safe, just adjectives. If your book really is for the readers of a certain author, then I think you go for it. Amazon's not going to block an account. They're going to just say, hey, you shouldn't do this. And then you can change it. So maybe that's a little loose and fast for people. But I think I'm willing to put an author's name in there if it really makes sense to do so. If adjectives work better, I'll go with the adjectives.
Yeah, and that's actually where I'm looking. I haven't done the author Q&A thing like Nick suggests, but that's where I see him doing that is, you know, the question for the author is, you know, why did you write the series? And it's like, you know, because, and for me, it's like, because I love Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code, I wanted to write a religious thriller in the same kind of vein. So it comes in more naturally in a Q&A thing. And that's all of this is personal choice to people listening. You know, but then the call to action, and one of the things with copywriting, which I learned, you know, years ago now, but it still seems really odd, is you actually have to tell people to click, or you have to tell people to download stuff, and you feel like an idiot because you think, shouldn't they just do that naturally? But so what is that final line needed, and what is a call to action so people know?
A call to action, and I think the SPP guys did a good job getting the word out about this in Write, Publish, Repeat. A call to action is literally asking someone to perform a certain action. And when it comes to a book description page, that action is to buy the book or download the book if it's free. And you literally have to say, buy book title today to jump into the adventure, whatever. And I like saying today. I'm a big fan of today in my calls to action. Not tomorrow, not just buy, I mean, do it right now. Mm. And I've found some success with that. And that should be basically the last thing people see. Or if you're doing the Q&A, I would put it maybe something before and after the Q&A, because not everybody is going to read all the way through that. But yeah, I mean, it's a copywriting. It's probably the oldest copywriting principle there is you need a call to action because it improves the number, the percentage of people who buy.
Mm, and it's crazy, but we're all just animals at the end of the day, and we respond to these cues, and you feel like an idiot, but you know, it works.
Yeah, your psychology friend should just write a book about calls to action.
I think there's plenty of them. Okay, so we've covered loads of stuff there about all kinds of things on sales descriptions. And obviously people can check out your books to have a look at your sales descriptions, which obviously are just amazing. That's a tough one, Brian.
I know.
But no, and I'll link to all those in the show notes. We'll come back to that in a minute. But I just had another question before we go, and that is about podcasting, because you are the co-host of the Sell More Book Show with Jim Cookwell. And we all know it. You do most of the work. And Jim sweeps in and is a co-host. And so what are the pros and cons of doing a podcast? And would you recommend the authors do it based on what it's done for you?
Well, first of all, I will say that Jim is awesome.
And yeah, we love Jim. He's been on the show loads.
Yeah, we all love Jim. And I really don't mind doing more work than he does on one side, because, and this really ties into my answer. I think getting into Sell More Book Show with Jim was really all about, I wanted to grow my platform. I really wanted to grow my platform. And I knew Jim from Author Marketing Club, and I saw the things he was doing. And I actually rejected him for one of my multi-author Facebook events because I didn't have room left. But with that in mind, he was asking about, hey, does anyone want to do a podcast with me? And because I'd connected with him beforehand, I was the first to raise my hand. Now, would I recommend this? Absolutely. Podcasts are fantastic. And even if you have to do a lot of heavy lifting to make your podcast happen, and we knew this going into it. Our podcast is a weekly news show in which we read descriptions of each news story and three tips. So we knew going in, we'd have to research the news, have to write those news descriptions. I was doing it right before I came on this interview, was writing the news descriptions for the upcoming show. So we knew there would be a lot of work every week going into it. But, and you know this, there is no connection quite like reaching people through audio. Mm-hmm. People feel as though they know you, and they do know you because they get to hear your little quirks and they hear your mistakes and your non-mistakes. Mm-hmm. And they really get to make this deep connection. And we've found some of these fans that we've been able to pull in from Sell More Book Show, they're just so engaged. And we talked about this in our email, how you've lifted a couple of ideas from us. Mm-hmm. We've lifted ideas from you. And the podcast community is so great. We all become friends.
Oh, it's so incestuous, isn't it?
Oh, it's bad in that way. No, it's very good. But we get to know each other. And I mean, when I met you in Charleston, Joe, like we just automatically had a hug because we knew each other from podcasting. Mm. And I think that you make, and I met a lot of people over the last year who'd been Sell More Book Show fans. So if you're the kind of person who wants a deeper connection with people on a certain subject matter, I would recommend doing a podcast and figuring out a format that you can do every single week so that you will be able to keep it going, because we have news all the time. You have interviewees all the time. If you know your subject, then just go for it.
Mm. For nonfiction only, do you think? Do you think any of the fiction podcasts are working?
The only fiction podcasts I know of that work are the kind where you're actually doing fiction. Mm. And there are some really good ones. I think one is Welcome to Night Vale.
Welcome to Night Vale. Night Vale. That's like a serial. Scott Sigler is probably the best known guy. He's doing it with his books. He's been doing a weekly fiction for, I think it's 7 years now.
Wow.
I know. Wow. Absolutely amazing. And I became a fan of him because of that. So I think it can work, but both of us would acknowledge that this is really hard work, wouldn't we? I mean, it's super hard work podcasting, and I almost gave mine up last year, you know, because just the amount of extra time. And then in the end, I doubled down and went weekly because of you guys. But I think you're right, like the weekly show makes a really big difference. So that would be a tip from me. But equally, I think for me and you, like, partly the reason why I was, you know, interested in you is anyone who makes it past 10 episodes, that's kind of my cutoff now. When people ask me, can I go on people's shows? I'm like, have you done 10 episodes? Is that your cutoff too? Like, if people make 10, are they going to make it?
I think that if you can do it for 10 weekly, I'm going to say 12, because I'm a big fan of 3 months. I'm a big fan of 3 months for forming a habit. And so I'm just going to be difficult and say 12, but no, 10 to 12 episodes, if you can get those in the can and get your system down, because Jim and I didn't know what we were doing after the first couple of weeks. We had to keep working on it. I think we actually had you on episode 9. So we still didn't know what we were doing by the time we had you to visit us. But you got to get your system down. You keep working on refining. Jim and I are always looking for ways to improve. We just started our Patreon. We were influenced by you and your Patreon page. And so I think that lift ideas from other authors, other podcasters, keep working on refining your own. And if you can get through those 10, I think you can make it. You can have success.
Fantastic. And that modeling idea, of course, lifting ideas from other people and persisting and trying is exactly the same for sales descriptions. So we've come full circle.
All the way around.
So tell people where they can find everything about you and also about Best Page Forward, and where do you want people to go?
Okay, well, I'm going to do 3 links because I'm greedy. So Sell More Bookshow, you can go to sellmorebookshow.com. If you're interested in booking a description for me, you can go to bookbestpageforward.com. Here's the big one. I'm doing this big giveaway. I'm giving away $1,000 in my services for copywriting. So that's emails for your autoresponder, ads, author bio, descriptions, and more. I'm giving that away. And anyone who signs up for the giveaway actually gets a free cheat sheet, my cheat sheet on writing better book descriptions.
Oh, I want that. I'm signing up. Where can I get it?
Okay, good. Well, Joanna and Joanna's fans, you can get that at authorcopy.com. If you go to authorcopy.com, you'll go to the giveaway page, put in your email, and you will get the cheat sheet and a chance to win the $1,000 Copywriting for Authors giveaway.
Oh, I hope I win. That's awesome.
That would be awesome. That would be really
cool. That would be so cool. No, and it's funny because I feel like copywriting, like I started learning from Copyblogger like years ago, you know, writing headlines, and there's so much we could talk about on that. So we might have you back on the show next year, you know, to kind of go through that. And I feel like we're in the maturing space in self-publishing where talking about these things is becoming just much more normal. And, you know, because it's an internet marketing world, copywriting, and there's so much to learn. So thank you so much for your time, Brian. That was great.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.